Good morning. Morning. Good to see everybody. See some familiar faces and some faces I don't know, so it's good to meet those of you that I don't know yet. We have a great long-standing partnership, friendship with this Sunday school class and our ministry in Japan. We've been doing short-term trips that have sent primarily from this class to serve with us almost every year. We've had some breaks. This year's a break, unfortunately, because we're doing a big conference that's kind of requiring all of our attention later in the fall, but hope to kick it off again next year. So yeah, and for those of you that have been before, you can share with others about that opportunity. As John Paul mentioned, my name is Brett, and I serve the ministry called Christ Bible Institute in Nagoya, Japan. And I've got a wife and three kids. Been there for 13 years this fall. Time flies. I was joking with Emily when I first started teaching at this class. I usually stop by when I'm in town. I was like, I was y'all's age. and now I'm not. So anyways, it's fun. Just, yeah, things change. We're going to talk a little bit today about the idea of escapism. And I think there's several different angles. This is something I've been thinking about a lot this summer, probably because I've been really stressed because we're doing a major, like kind of the biggest ministry project we've done in my tenure. And I've been feeling really stressed. And so I've been not just tempted to escapism, but I've been participating in escapism. And so it's been on my radar a lot. Something I've been thinking about a lot and love to be able to reflect on it today. We're going to start out with two passages of scripture. The first is 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13. And if you have a Bible or app that you want to flip over, you can do that. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13 says, "Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." It's only one verse. I'll read it again. "Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." All right, so that's one. Now, we're going to look over to 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. So we get to hear from Peter. Now we're going to hear from Paul. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. And these are some of Paul's like last words to his disciple Timothy. And he's describing kind of like, this is, he can see the end of his ministry. He's like, I'm coming up on the end, and these are the things that I have to share. So they're really profound. He says, "Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." I'll read it one more time again, just one verse. "Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." Okay, so both these passages have in common this idea of setting our minds, our hopes, our affections, our desires on something that is to come. Something that is future-oriented, and ultimately setting it on Christ. Like looking forward to Jesus Christ being revealed, returning, making all things new, that being kind of our ultimate hope and reflection. Okay, so we're going to zoom in on that in a minute, but I'd like to just kind of start out, I know you guys kind of already did your funeral dirge discussions, but at your tables, I have a couple questions for you. And first question is, and this is going to seem really random after our passage, but hopefully it'll make sense in a minute. Did you go on vacation this summer? How many of you went on vacation this summer? All right, cool, good. Don't worry if you didn't. You're not excluded. So this is kind of the basic table discussion. Did you go on vacation this summer or anytime recently? So it could be any time this year, that's fine. Where? What did you do? And if you didn't, where do you wish you went? Okay? Or where do you wish you could have gone? So take, 5-7 minutes, kind of discuss, discuss that, and then we'll come back and dive into the passages some more. Okay? Go for it. All right. Did you guys get to talk about your vacations or imaginary desirous vacations? Anyone go anywhere cool you want to share?
Seattle?
Seattle's awesome. Got a friend that's a pastor there. He was a PCA pastor, and then the whole church became Anglican, so now he's an Anglican priest. Yeah, interesting shift. Anybody else? Anybody go anywhere cooler than Seattle? Yeah?
Dallas.
Nice. Staycation. From Israel. Oh, okay. Wow. Very cool. Awesome. We've been traveling around. It hasn't really been vacation, but we've had vacation moments, which has been awesome. We just got back from Myrtle Beach. It's where I grew up. And growing up in a vacation area, it's kind of, I don't know, you learn a lot about people. There's a saying in Japan, travel is like really popular in Japan. Just like travel is this exotic, exciting idea. It's kind of, maybe it's the same way in Dallas, but more so maybe. And everybody travels at the same like set holidays. So it's like really crazy, and then no one does travel otherwise, for internationally at least. And there's a saying in Japan that when you travel, you leave your shame behind. And I was like, man, that is exactly what happens, having grown up in Myrtle Beach. Let me do a quick poll. What type of vacation do you prefer? And this, I'm stealing this. I don't know if you guys ever listened to the Myers Brothers Family Trips podcast. Anybody? Seth Myers? No? Okay. They asked this question, what type of vacation do you prefer? Or they asked what family trip, but for you guys, what kind of vacation do you prefer? Relaxing, adventurous, or educational? Who's a relaxing? Who wants to go somewhere relaxing? Okay. And then how about adventurous? Somebody wants to go on an adventure. Oh, cool. Wow. All right. And then how about educational? All right. Yeah. Nice. The few, the strong. So we've got our museums, our zip lines, and the beach. Is that kind of the epitome? All right. So here's a question. Why do we take vacations? So obviously there's a rest component, which is a very biblical good thing. Like, God made us human, which means that we have limits and finitude, and when we work really hard, we get tired. And so we take today as a day of rest, and appreciate that you guys are using part of your rest day to worship the Lord and gather together. But we also, like, over the course of time, like, you get tired, and getting to take a vacation off of work or off of your normal responsibilities is a real gift. And we can, you know, kind of relax and recover and then feel ready to dive back in. Why do we kind of go to the certain places that we go? I think that another dynamic that comes with vacations is a little bit of like an escape. It's a getaway. We use that language, right? Southwest still have the want to get away, like the you pricing or whatever. Like, you gotta, I want to get away. And there's a sense of like, man, like, my normal life has some real drudgery to it, or some real stress, high stress to it. And man, if I could just go somewhere. And I think that that's okay. So world that we live in, a lot of stress. And it's tough because it's like, at least for right now, like, we're not like in a war where, you know, there's a war zone happening around us. That's extreme high stress. But in some ways, like, you know it's there and you can deal with like the chaos and stress of it. The stress that we deal with is like paper cut stress a lot of times. And then you might get some family emergencies or, you know, a personal health emergency or something that kind of ramps things up a lot. But just normal life, like, you're having to look out and take into account everything that's happening around the world and how it impacts your sector at all times. And just means like we live at kind of high stress point on a regular basis. And we have these different tools that we use for kind of escaping or getting away in our minds. And one of the things I've been paying attention to this summer as we've been traveling around, mostly doing work, but getting some time off as well, is, you know, music that captures this. Some really popular songs that capture this. And you guys, it's funny because you started with music. We're going back to music again. Let me ask you this question. So anybody listen to Jimmy Buffett? Okay, parrot heads. How about Kenny Chesney? Kenny Chesney's kind of old now. Zac Brown Band? Couple more. Beach Boys? Whole different demographic. So what did Jimmy Buffett, Kenny Chesney, and the Beach Boys all have in common? Something about going to Mexico. Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, you captured it. Like, each of these artists has, like, lots of songs that teach us how to escape from this kind of stressful situation that we're in and go somewhere else without actually having to go there. We can just, like, go there in our minds, which is, like, kind of therapeutic, but then it's over. And then it's done, and then you're back, and oh man, what else is going on here? So think these are a few songs from my summertime playlist. I don't know about yours. See if you recognize this song. Strumming my six string on my front porch swing. Smell those shrimp, they're beginning to boil. Wasting away again in
Margaritaville.
Search for my lost shaker of salt. Some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but I know it's nobody's fault. That's the first verse. It gets more self-referential. He realizes it's his fault later. That's how most arguments with my wife go, by the way. Anyways, what is Jimmy imagining in that song? What's he inviting us to imagine? Y'all can just chime in.
A carefree place.
Yeah, being carefree. What else?
No responsibility.
No responsibility. Yeah, yeah. Zac Brown Band song. Jimmy Buffett does a little feature. It's like, I'm going to put the world away for a minute. Pretend I don't live in it. Yeah? So, yeah, exactly. Margaritaville is like, I'm going to just kind of hang it up for a minute.
Drinking,
yes. Because the gateway for this imagination is kind of perceived that it's happening through alcohol. Like, alcohol is like the means to carry me away to where, okay, my worries can finally chill out. It's very interesting. And it shows up a lot in this kind of music. Cool. Okay, let's see if you guys know this one. Aruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you. Bermuda, Bahama. Come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Ooh, I want to take you down to Kokomo. We'll get there fast and we'll take it slow. That's where we want to go, way down in Kokomo. Has anybody ever been to Kokomo before? No, you haven't, because it doesn't exist. It's completely made up, just like the Beach Boys. That's a Beach Boys song. The Beach Boys, there's a documentary on Disney Plus. Watch it if you have some time. They were completely artificial. So, like, came out in the 60s. Most people in the 60s are landlocked, like, live in places like Dallas. They've never been to the ocean. They've never been to the coast, unless there was some, like, massive trip that they did with their family at some point. And the Beach Boys came on singing about, they took this kind of, like, surf rock thing, and then they, like, leveled it up and made it really popular all across the country. It's like Surfing USA is one of their songs. It's this idea of like, you can go surfing anywhere, even if you're like not anywhere near an ocean. And it's teaching people how to imagine. And those guys, they didn't even surf. Okay? I felt so betrayed when I learned that. Like, you guys are posers. But they perfected this. And what was really fascinating about the Beach Boys, you watched this documentary, is they were like, artistically, they were like really on par with some of the big bands like the Beatles, and they were hanging tough trying to compete like with the Rolling Stones when they came out. But their music, as their music started like changing, people stopped listening to them. They got less popular. And so they were like, oh my goodness, what are we gonna do? We were so cutting edge for a little while there. What happens, they released a greatest hits album, new generation, and that new generation loved their music because it did the same thing for them. It helped them kind of escape to these delightful places where their minds could go. It's this happy, relieving sound, and everybody loved it. And so they got re-popular, and it's kind of happened like over and over again. Even though the Beach Boys are not, you know, an item as much anymore. Brian Wilson, the lead singer, passed away this past year. Okay, I got one more of these. You ready? I've been up to my neck working 6 days a week, wearing holes in the soles of the shoes on my feet. Been dreaming of getting away since I don't know. Ain't no better time than now for Mexico. Anybody? No shoes, no shirt, no problem. Blues? What blues? Hey, I forgot them. The sun in the sand and a drink in my hand with no bottom and no shoes, no shirts, no problems. Now, I remember when that song came out because way too many tourists took that literally. I worked at a seafood restaurant. It was a big seafood restaurant in Myrtle Beach, like over 170 items on the buffet. All you can eat snow crab legs. It's very popular, long lines during the summer. And I worked on the porch, and I took souvenir photos. And we had a pirate that worked on the porch with me, which is awesome, because it was like these two retired guys, and they would alternate. And it was, for one guy, it was just his golf money. Like, he was a retired veteran, and it was just like his golf money. Like, he would play golf all day, and then he'd come in and be a pirate in the afternoon and evening. 3 days, like 3 days on, 3 days off. That was kind of their pattern. And then the other pirate, so that was Pirate Freddy. Then there's Pirate Frank. Pirate Frank thought he was a pirate. That was a whole different thing. Like, he actually, like, you know, bought and sold gold on the side. That was like one of his businesses. He had a few other shady deals that he was always trying to like monetize further his pirate role. Yeah, learned a lot from those pirates. But No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problem came out, and it was Bike Week. And so they gave us like just these extra souvenir shirts that they usually sold. They were just like triple extra large, and basically anybody that came in with no pants on, you had to give it to them and, all right, put this on, because then they could actually come in the restaurant, because you couldn't go in the restaurant, No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problem. Okay, so each of these songs has in common this idea of taking us to some place where there's no stress. There's plenty of alcohol, which reminds us we don't have to worry about the stress, and there's peace and relaxation. So, what's a Christian response to this way of doing life? And I don't, like, talk about escapism, like, there's different forms of escapism, right? So, like, Netflix binge can be escapism. Like, oh, this weekend I feel lonely, and I'm just gonna binge on, I don't know what even show to name. I'm out of touch. Anyways, you can fill in the blanks. I'm going to binge Netflix. And so that makes me feel relief for a little bit to get through this kind of hard thing. You could do the same thing with video games, right? I'm just going to kind of dive into this mystery world where I can be a conqueror and or whatever. And there's a fun aspect to it, but it's kind of fleeting. So there's different kinds of escapism. But what's unique about what this music's capturing is that we're doing it in our minds. Like, it's using our imagination to take us somewhere to relieve us from our stresses into this kind of really beautiful place. So let's compare these to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13. So at first, the worldviews would seem to stand in stark contrast to one another, okay? So Peter says, therefore, preparing your minds for action. That's a bit different than laying on the beach, right? That's different than, you know, wishing I was knee-deep in the water somewhere, summer sun blowing wind through my hair, only worried in the world is the tide going to reach my chair. And then the next thing he commands is for us to be sober-minded. Now, the word there in Greek is like sophrosune, and it means be sober, with reference to your mind. So it's like, it's not just like saying you shouldn't get drunk, but it's definitely saying that. Does that make sense? Like, in other words, you can get drunk on more things than just alcohol within that the semantic range of that word, but it's definitely talking about alcohol. And it's really easy to like medicate with alcohol, right? Like, and so Peter is saying like, yeah, don't do that. Like, your minds are incredibly important, and if you kind of rely on this thing that's called a gift in other places in Scripture, a gift for man, if you rely on this too much or you over enjoy this, then you know it's actually going to cause a lot of problems. You're not going to be able to do well. The next thing he says, and so when Peter says being sober minded, again comparing it to our you know musical excursion here, that's really different than it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Okay. However, Peter also encourages us to set our hope on something. Now, that's kind of like interesting language if you think about it. So I've got an iPad here that's got my notes on it, and I can take my iPad and I can set it on the pedestal. Right? So how do I take my hope, which is this, you know, thing that's non-tangible inside of me, and how do I set it on something? So I want to take just a moment here and pause and give you guys a chance at your tables to think. So we've been talking about these different escapist musicians and some of these songs and what they capture. And essentially what I'd like to say is I think they're teaching us how to set our hope on things. How to imagine something beyond what's here. What might that have in common with this idea of setting our hearts on something that we're supposed to set our hearts on, which is the revelation of Jesus Christ? Does that make sense? That question makes sense? Do you guys have questions about my question? Cool. Take like 5-6 minutes and talk about that together, and then we'll talk about it all together, okay? Okay. Sorry, anytime like we do the discussion group things, it means I have to interrupt you. And someone was saying something really profound right now. It's more profound than whatever I'm about to say. And so I probably should have just waited longer, but I can't, I don't know what's going on in the group. So anyways, sorry if I interrupted a great deep thought causing you to miss. What pop from these discussions? What do you think Peter's getting at? And what? How does it connect to this idea of imagining a more delightful place?
So one of the things that we mentioned about how we connect with God is, you know, the three means of grace, right?
Uh-huh.
The Word of God, prayer, and the Lord's Supper, but also other ways through the arts or through imagining.
Sure. Yeah, so through our imagination, like, we are communing with the Lord in certain ways. It's good. Yeah, good.
Somewhere better.
Yeah, yes. And this is interesting because of like the transcendental argument for God. Any philosophy students out there? No? Okay, never mind. Basically the idea of like, if I can imagine a world that's greater than the world that I live in right now, that's proof there is a God. Now, I'll let you like, you can sit on that and think about it and reflect on that, whether that's actually, it may not feel convincing, but like that this is actually a way to argue towards the existence of God. And that is something that, you know, whether it's Jimmy Buffett or, you know, the Apostle Peter is realizing like right now, this is not exactly the way it's supposed to be. And it's not because there's something wrong with work, right? It's like God made us to work and new heavens, new earth, we're going to work again. We're going to work with joy the way we were meant to work. We're going to work without the, you know, same sweat and pain that comes with work now, but we're still going to work. So it's not that work's the problem, but there's the fall, the curse of the fall that's pushing back. It's the sin and suffering and weaknesses that we're beset with that are dogging us. Anything else? These are really good. Yes.
Hoping something.
Yes.
So it's a nice like checkpoint for me is what else am I hoping in a lot?
Yeah, yeah.
And like that's definitely going to be a sign that like I'm not hoping in Jesus as much if I'm hoping way more in something else.
Yes. Good. Cool. Okay. This is exactly where I want to go. So escapism, I think the way that we tend to think about escapism is bad. If you're a Christian, you should be fully present. You should be, you know, worshiping God all the time. And so like, if I'm fantasizing about, you know, a beer in Hawaii, then like that's lesser than, you know, my Christian calling. I should be serving people instead or working hard, or heartily as to the Lord and not to men. Something like that. Maybe that's not you, but I think that's a common trajectory. We think about escapism and we're just like, that's bad. But we all do it and we don't even think we're doing it. It just starts happening. And we get caught up in it. And what I think, you know, this passage here, and one of the reasons that we read 2 Timothy 2 is that Paul is encouraging virtually the same thing. He says he wants us to love the appearing of Jesus Christ. There's no way we can love the appearing of Jesus Christ unless we're imagining and thinking about it. Now, when he says the appearing of Jesus Christ, when Peter says the revelation of Jesus Christ, what he's referring to is the ultimate return of Christ. Okay, so there is a sense now where we're getting, Jesus is revealing himself to us and we can delight in him and we can commune with him and know that he's present and that brings joy. But all of that is a foretaste to the ultimate revelation that Jesus has come back. And when Jesus comes back, the promises of Scripture are that he's going to make all things new. The final judgment is going to happen. So all sin is going to be cast out and all those that refuse to follow Christ will be judged and sent to hell. We will be given resurrected bodies, and in those resurrected bodies, they will be fit for eternity, fit to worship and enjoy God for eternity in ways that we can't even like fully imagine. So Paul says, what no eye has seen and no ear has heard, these are the things that God has stored up for those who love his appearing. So when I hear these songs, whether it's, you know, Kenny Chesney, Jimmy Buffett, or the Beach Boys, what I see is that they're actually teaching us to use muscles that are good muscles to help prepare us for the loving and longing for the return, revelation, appearing of Jesus Christ. The problem is that they're like non-weight resistance training. So in other words, if that's all that we do, we're not getting very strong in our hope. Our hope is like, it's very minuscule hope. And God's designed us to have much more capacity for hope, but it takes work. So my takeaway for us today is, you know, whether you hear these songs on the radio or whether this is like you catch yourself, you know, imagining being somewhere else in the world instead of where you are in the particular moment because things are stressful at work, is to let yourself sit on the beach for a minute or in the mountains of Colorado for a little bit, skiing, or wherever that happy place is. But then give that to the Lord. Say, Lord, this is where I am right now, and I know that this is a foretaste of the glory and delight that is to come. And so I do want to get to do this at some point, or I am thankful I got to do this in the past. But what this is, the desire I feel, I want this to be a desire for you and your appearing, and I can't wait for the thing that's even greater than this. Does that make sense? And that's something we can do together, too. It's like, I mean, how often do we spend, like, we share about, like, our trips, our vacations, what we want to do, where we went, what we did. How much do we spend thinking about what is this world going to be like when Christ returns? To be a discussion. So as we think about like an area that's like really hard, it's like, what is it going to be like when this hard thing is not here anymore? Or when we think about things that are delightful, what is it going to be like when this thing is perfected? Because this isn't the perfect form of it yet. Okay, so final time together at tables is to spend a couple minutes doing that together. What is it like to imagine the revelation of Jesus Christ, to imagine, to love his appearing together. And you can share, like, here's something that's hard, and I imagine it would be so amazing when this hard thing's gone. Or you can share, here's something that's good, and I can imagine it's going to be so delightful when this thing reaches its full form. Does that make sense? Cool. All right, we'll spend a few minutes doing that to close.